Well, hello and welcome to What's Brewing CISFA. What's Brewing CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community College's Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CISFA president. My co-host, Dana Yarbrough, is just wrapping up her home improvement work and will join us on the Friday show. Until then, let's get this show started. And welcome to another episode of What's Brewing CISFA. As always, let's get started with our first cups. So pour yourself something nice, and we'll get right into the news today. As I said, my co-host Dana has been wrapped up in all this home improvement work. So today is her last day here that we're going to give her off from the show so that she can do the final cleaning after the floors have been installed and the painting is all done. And we will have her join us on Friday. We'll also see if we'll have anyone to interview as we are working on a couple people here in CISFA and surrounding industry to try to join us for an interview again. So we'll get those back up and ramped up so that we'll have some interesting subjects to talk about with interesting people. Otherwise, today is our show that we record on a Tuesday. So, of course, that means it's a news day. And I do want to talk about a variety of news items from around the financial aid world. But before I get into that, I just want to talk a little bit about this topic that's always in the back of my head. And this is whether I'm talking with friends or family or coworkers, is about where you get your news from. And it's not just that, you know, you get it from a gossipy circle or something, or I heard something from someone on campus about something they probably would not know very well. I'm talking about just your regular daily news. And this would include news regarding financial aid or higher education or general world politics. Where you get your news is really important. You know, where do you go for reliable sources? And also, especially considering so much news is found online now. You know, back in the day, back when I was young, you would get your news from your local news on TV, you know, at whatever, 5 o'clock or 10 or 11 o'clock at night, depending upon your time zone. You'd get the national news from one of three networks. You'd have newspapers delivered to the house. Maybe if your parents had the money, you'd get Time Magazine weekly. Then there was U.S. News and World Report. And that name's been out there for a while, and I think that one's gone also to the wind. They used to be the ones that would do the college rankings in particular. So every year there'd be like an extra, you know, extra thick magazine on college rankings. But U.S. News and Report. Then there was Newsweek. But these would be considered reliable sources because these are like original sources versus nowadays you have news aggregators where you go out to Google News or Yahoo News or such to get your news. And they might be coming from a variety of sources. Could be the major news wires, if you don't know what that is, in a sense, back in the day, so that every local little newspaper didn't have to have reporters stationed in, say, New York on Wall Street, or a reporter stationed somewhere in Washington, D.C. to report on national politics. In a sense, you had a pool of reporters to get reliable articles from. So we had the Associated Press. And then I think it's United Press International, UPI. And I remember this only because, you know, back in the day when I was in college and I worked in radio, TV, film, I was a radio station manager for a little while on campus. And so what did we do for news? Well, getting news on campus was relatively easy enough. You could go to the secretary of the college president and find out things. You could connect with if there was a public information officer about events going on campus, talk to student government or the student union about, you know, more activity type related things. But when it came to news in general, we had a printer in a closet hooked up to, I don't know if it was a satellite or like a phone modem type of thing. And we paid for Associated Press articles. And so the thing would just kind of keep printing all day long, articles that would come through, and it would be news and sports and weather for our area. And again, this was printed world. I guess remember we had it printed on basically like a toilet paper roll of paper, you know, normal, you know, width of a piece of 8.5 by 11 paper, but it was a big roll that sat on this printer. And the reason was is as it would come out of the printer, you'd rip it off just like a register receipt at a store if you ever get your receipts anymore. And then we would cut it into pieces and hang it up on the board. One spot for news, one spot for sports, one spot for weather. And those that were in radio, TV, film, and going online or going on the air to talk about the news, weather, and sports would take those and kind of wrap them all up, maybe staple them into a stack, and be ready to go with their news. And again, came from a reliable source, pool reporting, etc., National Weather Service, and you had it all right there. Without having to, have a reporter in every major city. You know, Los Angeles Times, New York Times could do that to a point. But smaller newspapers, smaller towns, how else would you get your national news? Keep it in mind, this would all be pre-internet days. But now that we are into the internet, it still becomes an important part. And so my first news item for today, continuing off this topic, comes straight from the U.S. Department of Education's Federal Student Aid Office, you know, FSA, the people that handle all the different federal student aid programs. So FSA posted an electronic announcement late last week that with the current uncertainties surrounding the slow but gradual end of the coronavirus emergency, the 2021 FSA Annual Training Conference will be held virtually again this year, running November 30th through December 3rd. Registration information and more will be posted to the conference website at fsaconferences.ed.gov. I know many of us attend that this year. So many more people attended than I think they were expecting. Hopefully we will see in 2022 a live conference somewhere. I really hope they come back out to Vegas. First, because it's got capacity. Second, it's Vegas. Let's go on to another news item here. Now, I had this all set up for Dana today, but she's still busy. Now, she would have said something along the line, I think, on this one, that she would have loved to attend this conference at some point this year, just because it's virtual and it would have saved me money, because this year's WASFA, which is our Western Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, is virtual again. But some years they're out there in Hawaii, and I'm sure she would like to go to that. So this conference is running April 26th through the 30th. It's coming up next week. And certainly worthwhile to attend. If you're interested in attending, I'm going to put a link to the registration site in our show notes. And it's relatively affordable. So WASFA, especially for people from California, gives you a different perspective on financial aid than what you might get by going to a CSFA conference or even a CASFA conference, and especially on a national conference where you've taken into account perspective from across the nation. WASFA, at least, is the Western Association, so it is, you know, the Western states, and you get a good perspective of things going on in Nevada, Oregon, Washington State, Arizona, and that's where I went one time for one of these WASFA conferences. But I know with Dana in particular, if she were to attend, she would hope that maybe in 2022, maybe they'll be in Hawaii or Alaska, somewhere far flung from here. But I did find some training that this year in particular and going on beyond this year will work well for Dana and many of my staff. CSAC, the California Student Aid Commission, recently sent out a special alert announcing training for high school counselors and other trainings for college financial aid staff. Special alert GSA 2020-13 lists training for people in financial aid like us, including the following topics: education level verification, Cal Grant payment codes and scenarios, the Cal Grant transfer entitlement program, Cal Grant 101, reports, tools, and customizing your roster, and programs for foster youth. These webinars are all free. I can say, after having worked with so many of the people from the Student Aid Commission on training like this, the CSAC staff are well experienced and are great presenters overall for all these topics. As such, we'll have a link to the CSAC training website in our show notes. One other thing here, I was checking out the FSA partner website recently. This is the site that replaced the IFAP information site for financial aid professionals, and saw that the Federal Student Aid Handbook has gone completely digital. It's got a completely new design to it. It's got some new navigational tools and some advanced search capabilities. You know, I'd say it's about time, but it's just good to see that FSA is making improvements to how we can all access the handbook, considering how often, you know, we'll have to refer to it for small things or big things while working on student files or trying to remember deep in the woods stuff like about institutional eligibility. The only thing I did find that was a little bit of a problem is if you're using the electronic version of the Federal Student Aid Handbook, and it's well laid out, all the chapter headings, subchapter headings in that. If it's an item that you click on a little arrow and then it expands a section, I wasn't able to highlight the section to copy to something else. It would keep closing up. But again, you always have the option to download the PDF version of the handbook. That's still always available. Now, before we move on to our last few items of the news, why don't we take a little musical break here and then continue on with our second cup. And just like that, we're back for our second cup here on the What's Brewing CSFA show. So time to fill up. It might be a slightly shorter than normal show just because didn't have as many news items. It seems to be a quiet day out there, or a week last week, in the financial aid world. But we do have some interesting things. And here's an interesting article I found out on the NASFA website. Something I've always wondered about. A phys.org, as in PHYS.org, a phys.org report, as quoted in the article that they have on the NASFA website, states the institutional compliance costs of the FAFSA verification mandate in 2014 totaled nearly $500 million, with the burden falling disproportionately on public institutions and community colleges, like all the schools represented here by CSFA. Think of that. Now, they didn't put that part in about CSFA, but obviously if it's disproportionately on public institutions and community colleges, we're in there. The report and article indicate the average institution spent $170,000 processing verification for students. In 2014, the total cost across the U.S. was $481 million, with two-year schools spending $225 million of that. Phys.org scaled their estimates by drawing on information from NASFA's Burden Survey that collects information on work burdens and operating budgets of financial aid offices across the U.S. As a last note on this, the average cost for all of this verification work amounts to 22% of a California, or I should say a community college's financial aid office operating budget. So that's a significant part there. It was higher than most other schools that were in the teens as far as percentages of their operating budget. But community colleges get hit a little harder. So we're going to put a link to the NASFA article and the phys.org website in our show notes, because I think it's very interesting. And it is one of those deep dive things that I've always wondered about, and I wish we had more experts in the data mining world out there to look at things like, what is the cost of verification? And you break it down by student, or in this case, this survey, and using the Burden survey from NASFA, this organization, which I looked on their website, has a number of interesting reports inside and outside of higher ed. Look at what is the cost of doing business. Because, again, just like anything in retail, you know, if you're giving a free bag or something in that bag with every purchase, you have to consider there is a cost to doing that. Running a store alone is one cost, but how much does it cost you for everything else? For the employee who does the checkout, credit card transaction fees, all these things you have to figure, they're not free. How do you factor that into the cost of doing business so that when you are selling something, you're not just selling at what you bought it wholesale for? How do you figure in these other things? And, of course, figuring a profit margin. But in our case, we're not worried about profit margins. We're just worried about, again, it's one of those things. How can I justify having enough staff to do a particular project or overall work, like, say, verification reviews for students, and know what, how much does that really cost to the college to do? Another good way to, when we deep dive on this kind of stuff later, hopefully, take into account then how we make requests for additional resources for our financial aid offices. Well, let's move on to some new news on another article here. So you know how we hear about books and articles and websites all the time that talk about how students should negotiate for better financial aid offers? Well, a recent article on the Money Magazine website really now finally gives some good advice about how students should use the correct terminology when they're trying to really appeal for more aid. Now, the article's title is a little misgiving here. Financial aid offers are negotiable. Here's how to ask colleges for more money and get it. In the section that covers tips to improve your chances of success in asking for more money, the first bullet recommends you use the correct terms, like appeal. And in particular, when you're speaking to the financial aid officer, you're writing letters. They recommend that you do send a letter, be honest in your letter, ask for specific amounts when possible, especially when you're you've got competing aid offers from similar colleges, and make sure you follow up with your financial aid office. So these are the steps along the way they recommend that everyone follow. The final line of the article is the biggest takeaway for students and parents. It's basically, it doesn't hurt to ask. Schools are not going to rescind your admissions offer or your financial aid offer just because you asked for more money. It's possible the school may say no, but you won't lose out on your original offers. I'll put a link to this Money Magazine article in our show notes for everybody. And then lastly, I found an article, a real sister article for this last one at from the Forbes website, titled How High School Students Can Maximize Merit-Based College Financial Aid. It's not as long as the other article at Money Magazine, but it touches on some similar points of interest. The one point I found interesting, and this is something I don't think a lot of parents and high school students think about, is to apply to the right schools. They suggest you apply to schools that will consider you a top applicant on your academic, athletic, or artistic performances, or where your traits and experiences are ones that the college really wants for their incoming freshman class. They also suggest students check out the college scorecard, available at collegescorecard.ed.gov, where you can find average test scores for incoming students at different colleges, along with other information. This information, though, along with your research, will help point you to the schools that are better matches for your academic acuity and what the schools are looking for. So it's not that you're looking to discriminate against yourself, but again, if you are looking for merit-based aid sometimes, and many times at private schools, you have to look at what are they looking for their students, you know. Do you add something there that, again, might be useful when it comes to applying for merit aid, give you that extra step up, you know, based upon, again, your academic background, your athletic abilities. You know, not everyone goes to a Division I school and gets an athletic scholarship, but maybe you are a top player going to a school that's like a Division III school, doesn't offer athletic scholarships, but instead you will still play for the team, you know, and maybe in that case, that will still help you get some merit scholarships on the academic side. Again, hopefully, hoping that you, of course, have good academics. Well, before we roll on to the last section of our show today, because that's all I have for news, why don't we take another short little musical trip? And just like that, back for our last segment here on the show. Let's get in our last sip, everyone. I never noticed how noisy that sound effect was. Must have the headphones turned up a little too loud today. But anyways, without Dana here, I don't really have a lot of financial aidy kind of I dare you to's that she would try to, you know, try to keep me tuned in on. But something I don't know if I've even brought up, I just have a lot more friends nowadays who are buying LPs and actual vinyl records. And so I have two books that I really like, and I have actually more than just two books. I probably have six books about the record industry, and I don't mean just music industry, but I mean the days of making records. So two books I'll put out there, and they're good coffee table books. One is literally titled Vinyl, The Art of Making Records. The Grooves, the Labels, the Designs by Mike Evans. It's a nice book, and it really talks about how they actually physically make albums, LPs, 12-inch records. It's a nice book. Again, seeing that we are kind of running away from the world of physical media, it's still not a bad idea to understand how something like that is made. And knowing many of my friends and family and all who are, again, running towards albums now, it's just interesting to see how do they actually make that record. One other book before we end the show today is called Best Selling Albums of All Times. Again, not specific to vinyl, but again, considering that they go back into the 50s and 60s, and it's broken down by decade, you can get an idea of the sense of how music has really changed. For example, here I just randomly opened to the page for the 1960s, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Band, Hearts Club Band, sorry, by the Beatles. So 1960s, there were no downloads. There was no Pandora, no Spotify. And so when you bought music, maybe you bought 45s, which are those little 7-inch records, and you got a song on one side and a song on the other. But most people consumed their music either by radio or by album. So just give you an idea, this album was released a couple years before I was born in June 1967. Probably a pinnacle album of the Beatles. Again, I know there's lots of opinions on that, but let's just say as far as musical interesting music, it certainly ranks up there. The album sold 12.7 million copies. A little hard to believe, considering most albums these days barely get to the million point. Let me just flip real quick before we move through 1980s. I've seen this movie on VHS tape 1,000 times at friends' houses during this time because this was high school for me. Top Gun, the movie. Not the recent release, but the original from 1986. It's a soundtrack album, and it sold over 10 million copies of that album. I think I owned it at some point myself. Who didn't back in those days? So if you're taking up vinyl, we're definitely going to have some shows later in this season. Maybe in season two, when I'm past president of CISFA and they'll let me do whatever I want, we'll talk more about collecting vinyl and having a nice stereo at home. But until then, let's wrap up this show knowing that we're going to have Dana back on Friday to join us. So I want to thank you, our audience, for tuning in today. And if you have something to say or you have some topics for us to talk about, email us at wbcisfa@gmail.com. As always, you can find this and all What's Brewing CISFA podcasts on Google Podcasts, your Apple Podcast app, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the TuneIn app on your Amazon Echo by using Alexa. What's Brewing CISFA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of me and Dana. This has been episode number 83, recorded the morning of Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. Have a great day, everyone, and have a great week.